Yeah, buddy, it's hour number three of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Rangers going to get back to action coming up in 90 minutes. They're in Boston, and so is Jared Sandler. He joins you now here on your home of the Rangers. And a good afternoon, Jared. How the heck are you?
Yeah, it's great. We're debating whether or not Ted Williams actually hit a ball to the famous Red Sea, which is like 17 miles away from home plate, back before there was reliable data and footage. And some people believe that science has proven he did. Other people question the verity of that messaging. But it's it would be like the farthest home run that anybody living has ever seen hit. So maybe he did it back when technology wasn't as good as it is today and guys weren't as strong as they are today, even though David Ortiz never came close to it.
Was Ted known as an elite power guy?
Well, I mean, 500 home runs probably would have hit more if he didn't lose years to the war, some prime years. So, I mean, yeah, he's one of the greatest hitters of all time for a reason. He could do it all. So, yeah, I mean, he wasn't necessarily known as a power first guy, I guess, just because of the way we talk about him as such an elite hitter. And, you know, he was a guy that was ahead of his time in terms of not giving a crap about going the other way and just playing to the strength of the hitter, which is to pull the crap out of the ball. But yeah, I mean, he was definitely a guy that could hit some dongs.
Yeah. Hey, did you had your name in the inside wall at the Green Monster?
Yes. Yeah, I did. The first time I ever came here, 6-7 years ago, maybe. And then I actually went last year when we took Jack Leiter and some of the other rookies, guys who had not been here previously, inside the wall. I was surprisingly able to find it, which was kind of cool. But that's a really neat thing. There aren't many features at a ballpark like that that have, maybe not any, where there's like shared history that dates back decades and decades and decades. It's a pretty cool thing, and you definitely feel the history of baseball when you're in this ballpark. And understandably, we got, you know, a lot of new beautiful ballparks around the league, but you just don't have a whole lot of ballparks that, you know, that reek of history in a good way that Fenway does.
Hardest ballpark to call a game in?
Are you asking?
I'm asking ballpark? Fenway Park, hardest ballpark to call a game in.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. This is a really unique view. This is definitely not it, but you're like over the top. You're like right on top of home plate, so it's definitely a different vantage point. I think Pittsburgh's a little difficult just because, at least in my years doing this, Pittsburgh hasn't been very good, so the atmosphere kind of stinks, and you're up with the birds. And but, yeah, I mean, I'll tell you this. Any ballpark where it is like 32 degrees, where it seems like we've had a bunch of those games, you know, the last couple years, that sucks. That's not a whole lot of fun. But I don't know that they're brought us. I don't know. You know, there's some minor league parks these days where you're down the line.
Yeah.
Like weird vantage points. Alexandria, Minnesota in the Northwoods League, you're ground level. You're like my legs are below the ground. My chin was basically even with home plate. And so that, and the sun was shining in. That's the hardest place I've ever called a game in my life.
Well, I was asking you this because of all the weird bounces you get in the outfield. And the way the ball just caroms around out there, that you're trying to kind of figure out, is it going to be a home run or not because it hits off the wall? Or just those weird the doors and stuff, you know, the ball bounces around all around. You hit that ball past third base and it just stops in the outfield, you know, stuff like that.
I think that's a part of what makes it fun, because if you think about it like as a fan – like, think about, you know, when you watch a football game on TV, or even when you see it in person, you see a quarterback just launch one 40 yards, and it feels like, you know, it's 5 minutes from the time he releases the ball to the point the play is or isn't made. But, like, during the flight of the ball, you're like, what, you know, is he going to make the catch? Like, what's about to happen? And there's that excitement of the unknown. And you know, in baseball, I think those plays where an outfielder's going back, is he going to make the catch? Is he not going to make the catch? Or there's a ball that bounces off the wall. Is the guy going to get to third? Is the guy scoring from first, from first on a gap or whatever? Like, that buildup of anticipation and excitement of the unknown, that to me is like incredibly fun. Not that I don't love a good no-doubt home run, but the ones where it's like, is Julio Rodriguez about to take this one away because he's going to go 3 feet above the wall at T-Mobile, or is it going to, you know, somehow evade, you know, his reach? Like, that stuff to me is what makes this fun. I love, like, this ballpark really fun. It's just the uncertainty of all the nooks and crannies. This is not your standard symmetrical, boring, foul pole to foul pole, you know, curved wall. Like, there's a lot of uniqueness here.
See, you're not in the lineup. Is this something that's just, hey, it's maintenance. This is what we're going to try and do to keep him healthy for the remainder of the year.
Yeah, I think after the collision he had at home plate yesterday, he took a shot to the ribs and to the face, and I think they just wanted to give him a day instead of push him. And, you know, again, they're in this stretch right here where you got, 20 whatever games and, you know, with just one off day. And, he took a pretty, pretty hard shot at the plate, scoring from first on Brandon Nimmo's double. And, he obviously stayed in the game and hit the home run. But how you feel that next day, sometimes a little bit different than how you feel in the moment. And I just wanted to be safe.
Looks like, what is it, just five games, but he has five hits and two home runs and the OPS in at 800. Do you feel like the time off did him good in what you've been able to witness so far?
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, it's tough to know, how much the time off. Like, did he need all that time off, or was he naturally just going to do this because he's Corey Seager? I don't know. But either way, he's definitely – he definitely looks like he's inching closer. I would still tell you, Gavin, there, and again, he's held to a super high standard, but, there's still pitches that we're used to seeing him absolutely tag that, he's not consistently doing that yet, but I think, his game yesterday was definitely a great step in the right direction.
Jared, was that a little bit of Corey's fault at the play of the plate? Should he have been runner? Did he think he was going to get held at third?
Is that Ragsdale?
Was that on Ragsdale,
yeah,
or was that a Corey for not?
No, that's a good question. I don't know. I didn't see if Rags had like given him a stop sign at one point, or Corey just didn't think that the ball was going to get away, long enough for him to have a real scoring chance, or whatever the case might be. Corey in general, just with all the soft tissue injuries, they have it. They tend to play it a little more conservatively with him. And I'm not sure, who was at fault or anything, but obviously, he did slow down at one point before turning the Jets on, and thankfully was able to score. But yeah, definitely took a little bit of a hit to do it.
Jared Sandler here with you on The Fan. So how bad are the Red Sox, man? Is this a team that's hit the skids and is prime for dominating?
Well, I hope so, but the Rangers don't win here. This has been a haunted house. I mean, here at T-Mobile Park, maybe the two toughest places for the Rangers to win in the last 5-6 years. I don't think the Rangers have won a series here in quite some time. So, and then the Rangers are facing two lefties this weekend, and I know they did well against Joey Cantillo, their best performance against a lefty this year last Sunday against Cleveland. But the lefties have given Rangers problems. So you'd like to think so. I mean, Leiter, DeGrom, Eovaldi, that's the trio the Rangers are throwing out there this weekend. So you'd like to think great opportunity to win a series. The Red Sox have struggled. It's been a really bad year for them. And, unlike the Phillies, who also got off to a slow start and fired their manager, the Phillies have turned things around. They're like 6-7 games over 500 or something. Hasn't happened for the Red Sox. They're dead last in the AL East. But, the Rangers have not had a lot of success here. And so hopefully they can change that.
How's this matchup against Sonny Gray?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Sonny Gray's, he's had an identity shift over the years. He's not a big strikeout guy. I think the Rangers, the beginning of the year, would struggle against a guy like Sonny Gray because they were maybe patient for the sake of being patient. And when you got to pitch to contact guy like Sonny Gray, you're too patient against those guys, and they're throwing strikes. They get you on your heels, and they get you to, really miss the barrel of the bat with the way they're able to manipulate the ball, change speeds, change locations. But the Rangers here in general of late have been it's interesting, Zach. I was looking at their numbers, with the offensive uptick. And, you think, all right, well, maybe they're just not chasing, or maybe they're not striking out. Their chase rate is actually a little bit higher during this last, 3 or so week stretch where the offense has really picked up. Not significantly, but, in talking to people, it seems like it's more well-placed aggression. And you know, it's not being patient for the sake of being patient, right? It's not being patient because, you know, they're hearing in their head, well, you know, we're too aggressive. We're going to be patient when it makes sense to be patient. And so I think with a guy like Sonny Gray, he can definitely bait you into a lot of early back contact, weak contact, and have quick innings. But when you got a guy like Sonny Gray who, you know, is more of a pitch to contact guy, he throws a lot of different pitches, maybe that best opportunity is early. You just need to be ready to pounce. And so we'll see how he attacks the Rangers. I don't know that this is necessarily a matchup where you're like, oh, gosh, you're scared by it. But Sonny Gray exists and has success at this point in his career because of what he can do between the ears. He's a very smart pitcher. He knows what he has. He knows what he doesn't have anymore, and he's able to try and leverage that. The Red Sox also defensively are not very good, and you know, I don't know if the Rangers will be able to take advantage of it, but that's also something to consider.
What's the confidence meter Jack Leiter can make it through five innings?
I feel pretty good about that. Yeah, I feel pretty good about Jack getting through five. You know, love for him to get through six, especially after a little more taxing day for the bullpen yesterday. I'll be curious to see how he does against this Red Sox group. I think, you know, it's weird with Jack. The strikeout rate is up from last year. The walk rate is down from last year. But the fastball is getting hit a little bit more, getting hit a little bit harder this year. The changeup, which that's a weird one, too, because he gets a lot of swings and misses, but it's a really volatile pitch. You know, he gets swings and misses, but he also, you know, gets a lot of damage done against it when people make contact. So be curious to see how the fastball changeup combo plays tonight.
Well, have a great weekend there in Boston, Sands, and we'll look forward to catching up with you next week and talking about this team possibly getting into first place. What do you say?
Yeah, I would love it. Hey, can be tied for first place after tonight with a win and a Mariners loss.
Let's go. Have a great night, Jared. Thank you.
See you, fellas. Yeah, have a great weekend.
He's at Jared Sandler on Twitter, a must-follow for Rangers fans everywhere. We have Eric Nadell coming up at 4:40. We're not going to have what you're drinking and what you're thinking tonight if you're getting ready, because we're going to be right into the pregame at 5:30. So we'll hit the top sports stories of the day coming up here at the top of the hour with you. Eric Nadell, 4:40. What are we doing next, Walchuk?
Let's do a little mixed bag. What history tells us about the league's worst defense the next year, and three bold predictions for Team USA. That is next in the nation.
All right, welcome back. It's the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. We got Eric Nadell coming up in 15 minutes. He is live in Boston getting ready for Rangers Red Sox. Can you believe it? They hit rock bottom. Now they've won four series in a row, and they're sitting at 500. Okay, let's make a move. Nadell's coming up here shortly. Segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels are the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. Here's Walchuk with his mixed bag.
All right, let's go ahead and shake it up, and let's get into our mixed bag.
You want a chocolate? Mama.
Leave the gut.
Mama.
Take the cannoli.
Mama always said, life was like a box of chocolates.
How do they get the bag?
Just throw it in the bag.
You never know what you're going to get.
We're going to start with your Dallas Cowboys and what history tells us about the NFL worst defenses the next year. And this is from one cool customer on Blogging the Boys, doing some excellent work here. Now, the Cowboys, we know, worst defense in the league last year. They allowed 511 points over 17 games. Woo! Even Caleb Downs was like, what the hell? They gave up over 30 points a game. I didn't even realize how bad it was. Here's the thing. History tells you, as we go back to 2010, every single one of those defenses that were bottom of the league were much better the following season. In fact, on average, those teams improved by 3 wins the following season.
The worst defenses?
Yes.
Wow, that's nice.
Every single team in those last 15 years that were the worst defense the previous season reduced their points allowed with an average reduction of 100 points.
Every one of them?
Every single one.
Wow.
Okay? So, in fact, none of them got worse in terms of record, and none of them got worse in terms of allowing more points the following season. The only defense that did not produce at least a better result was the 2020 Lions, who their defense was better in terms of they allowed 52 less points, but it didn't result in their record overall was better. They were 3-13-1 in 2020. The following season, they were 5-11 in 2020. The following season, they went 3-13-1. Otherwise, every other team on this list got better, including thing in most recent years. You had the Jets in 2021. They went from 4-13 to 7-10. Their defense was worse than the league. They allowed 188 less points the next year. The Bears were 3-14. They went from that to 7-10 the next year. Their defense allowed 84 less points. It's a four-win change. And then Washington was the greatest lead. They went from 4-13 to 12-5 in the NFC Championship game. Eight-win differential and 127 points difference. Last year was Carolina. They went from 5-12 to 8-9 in the playoffs, and their defense gave up 154 less points. Now, what do they all have in common here? Well, the new change on defense. They also put in a lot of draft talent, which the Cowboys did. Now, some of these teams also spent a ton in free agency. The number one spenders on this list, the 2020 Dolphins, the 2012 Bucks. You also had the Jets in 22 and the 2017 49ers on this list. But what does it tell us about this Cowboys defense? Well, those overall, you go from 7 wins to 10 wins, that's probably your playoff team. And if you reduce your points allowed by 100 points, that would mean a reduction of almost 6 points a game. Those 6 points would have been worth 3 extra wins last year for this team. So they should be able to capitalize on just overall, based on the last 15 years of data, the worst defense. They could be at least 3 wins better this year.
That's something. So you would go from 30 to giving up 24, still a little bit below average, but very reasonable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if your offense is as good as it was last year, then you should be pretty good.
I mean, that's the
Bears. Yeah.
You're jumping quickly, and if your offense can make an improvement into the top three, maybe you are that contending team.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, those numbers were pretty jarring. I was like, damn, all right, that makes me even more optimistic about how good this defense could be. Now, Drew Bledsoe just jumped on Up and Adams with Kay Adams, and gosh, he was bringing a – they're talking about Tony Romo. And the know-it-all Tony Romo, here was an old trip down memory lane as Drew Bledsoe shares his thoughts in this story about Tony.
How was it with you and Tony?
With Romo, well, Romo, I've said this before, like Tony was pretty sure he had all the answers already, when back then.
No. Tell me something we don't know. Day freaking one, he's got like his trapper keeper, and he's like, I'm good.
He'd been with Vinny Testaverde for a couple years before me. And I'd learned a lot from Vinny, and then I was there, and he was certainly watching and learning. And I hope Tony watches this someday, because screw you, kid. I love Tony, he did have a little bit of a sense about him that he was pretty sure he knew what was going on already. But he also was a sponge and would listen and learn as well. Don't get me wrong. But then once he thought he knew something, he was going to tell you about it. But he was still actively learning, and he had, between Vinny and myself, shoot, probably 35 years of NFL experience that he got to watch and learn from, his first few years.
Did we call that like the what not to do from Vinny and Bledsoe? Just at that stage in their careers, But man, how about that from Tony Romo? Just already, Tony Romo, big Tony Romo, what's he done? He knows everything.
It's amazing to have that kind of confidence.
Yes.
When you're undrafted, rookie free agent.
Yeah.
You're not even sure if you're going to be on the roster, but I got the answers to the test, baby. Put me in, coach. Hey, some of that moxie, I guess, is how he made it.
I think if you got a bunch of these kids together at the radio station, they probably assume that they went to broadcast school. And, I'm not talking about you guys. I'm talking about guys like 8 and 9 years younger than you. But it's amazing, salute to those folks that don't need any actual experience having success to be confident.
Yeah.
Confidence is key.
Did you guys see these Seahawks Super Bowl rings?
Saw the little video of them. I didn't read any sort of write up of all the
gaudy,
different
more
details.
More gaudy than gaudy?
Did they make them into a necklace? Did they put a chain on it?
I think there's like all kinds of crazy things they can do with this. It was created by Jason of Beverly Hills, which I think does all these rings now. The centerpiece includes a pair of Lombardi Trophy replicas in honor of the franchise's 2 Super Bowl wins. They sit behind a Seahawks logo, which has 50 round white diamonds, in a nod to 2025 being the team's 50th season. The trophies and logos are surrounded by blue sapphires. On one side of each player's ring is their name and number above the letters MOB, a mantra the team adopted last season that stands for Mission Over Bull
Bleep. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Full money over.
Yeah. Yeah. On the other side is another saying, 12 is 1, above the Seattle skyline, and then the Super Bowl logo. It also has 17 wins, which is engraved inside the ring, noting the team's combined regular and playoff season victories. One of the special features is a 12-flag button that when you press it, it releases and expands the Lumen Field arches that sit on either side of the centerpiece to reveal the words World Champs. That's probably the coolest thing.
It's a battery operated ring.
It's freaking nuts. And then you can take it apart just like the Rangers rings, where you can like look inside and there's all kinds of other things.
Looks like it turns into a pendant.
Yes. It's crazy what they're doing with these rings now. And it's huge.
Yeah, no, this is great. You know, and we all freaked out when the Rangers one came in. It was like, it looks like the stadium. Now everybody's doing that.
Yeah, everyone's doing it now.
I'm wearing mine today and it feels tiny.
Yeah, compared to that,
that's 1996.
That's still gorgeous.
It is beautiful. That's classy.
That's just 1996, and I think when was the first time that we just started like the rings were just crazy big?
Unwearable.
Mike Lombardi was like his New England Patriot rings look unwearable.
Yeah,
you know, they don't look comfortable.
So when we see which ones did you win with New England? Was it like the first dynasty or the second one?
The second one.
Okay, so maybe like 2010 did we start this?
Let's just look them up.
Super I don't know, but yeah, they're crazy now.
There was a time when they said, you know what, let's make these things as big and gaudy as we can.
And it jumped in 2010, but then again in 2020.
Were the Ravens the first one? Did I remember the Ravens ring being like the 2000 Ravens ring? Was that kind of big and gaudy, or did I miss on
maybe
that one?
It had definitely classed up or gotten bigger by the time we got to the 2000s.
Yeah,
but there's been a couple of moments where the bar was set higher, and every ring that followed it,
you're crazy man,
you know, attempted to at least capture that kind of standard.
It looks badass. All right, here is Sports Illustrated. All right, they've got three bold predictions for the U.S. men's national team at the 2026 World Cup. We start off with this bold prediction.
We're going home early.
I don't like this one. But it says a lackluster opening atmosphere. Now, so far, Mexico's done it big. Canada just did it big. I mean, it seemed crazy there.
Was that a draw? Did I miss that one?
Yeah, 1-1.
Okay.
Canada and Bosnia.
But tonight it's going to be SoFi Stadium in Inglewood. I mean, I just can't imagine for the first match on home soil. I get it. Like, we're not a soccer nation. That's not our number one sport. But we're an event country.
Maybe I'm going to be wrong about this, but I've seen highlights of matches played in L.A., mm-hmm. you know, for their professional teams. And so I think they got two of them out there, by the way.
Yeah.
And so I've seen those matches. The crowd really gets into it. Big time get into it.
So I'm hoping like it's going to be nuts tonight, right?
I think absolutely.
I hope this is not a bold prediction that's accurate. I'd be maybe, so bummed.
Maybe our Hispanic friends out there, too, that live in the city will show up, you know, because they make a lot of noise.
The other bold prediction, you agree with this, they get 4 points in the group stage.
Makes sense.
So Australia, they think, you know, that could be a tough one. They can keep the game close, but they like their possibility of advancing as a second-place finisher on 4 points.
Dawson got me nervous about this Turkey game.
Yeah, Turkey's good. But I think you win tonight, draw against Australia, and lose to Turkey is the most likely
scenario. That's perfect. That's what
scenario.
They're going with here.
Okay. And, yes, I think 4 points should get you through. The cool thing about this you know, format with the expanded groups is they will take 8 third place teams.
Okay.
So you don't have to be one of the top two finishers anymore. You just have to be a third place team with more points than the rest of them.
Okay. So if you're like host nation, do you automatically get to go through?
No.
I'd love it if they did that.
Everything is on merit.
Come on, boys.
Like, listen, hey, we're going to take you because you're host nation if you're third place. Right?
They should, but I don't think they will. You know, but I fully expect to get any benefit of the doubt when it comes to the whistle. You know, I think FIFA knows what to do here. FIFA is a very corrupt organization.
Very corrupt.
It knows how to make the money.
They sure do.
And it knows what the USA being eliminated as compared to advancing could mean for the future of revenue globally.
Here's the third and final bold prediction from SI. Lucius, we were actually talking about this yesterday as we waited for our 30-minute show. The U.S. men's national team beats Iran before Argentina ends the journey. So if the U.S. men's national team finishes second in its group, it would set up a matchup with Iran, which is expected to finish second in Group G, which also features Belgium, Egypt, and New Zealand. That would make it the round of 32 match before ultimately the U.S. could knock them off and then go into the round of 16, in which they would lose to Argentina in this prediction. But could you imagine that in Arlington? You've got Team USA versus Iran.
The flag.
Crazy.
It's going to get intense, bro.
That would be politically heated.
It's going to get political.
It's going to get hot.
I kind of feel like we need to be out there
spicy.
If that happens.
Wild. That would get crazy.
Yeah, sometimes that happens where there's international tensions and the players meet, and it's possibly a beautiful moment.
Like Haiti versus France or something like that.
Maybe it is.
We can see the human in each other.
Yes, I love that.
Hopefully heal.
Yeah. All right. That's it. There's
thank you, Wolchuk. Terrific job.
Tonight. Let's go, boys.
Terrific job. We got Eric Nadel coming up next here. It is the G-Bag Nation here on your home of the Rangers. Pregame coming up at 5:30. All righty. Thank you, Lucius. Welcome back. It's the G-Bag Nation here on the Fan. We're now 45 minutes from Rangers pregame. They're in Boston with Leiter against Gray, and it's time now for the Eric Nadel Show, brought to you by Kubota and by TXU Energy. And a good evening, sir. How the heck are you?
I am doing just great. It's been a really hot day in Boston, and we are in an air-conditioned booth right now and nice. Really enjoying it.
How do you like working there in Fenway?
It's probably my favorite place to work. You know, you've got the history built in 1912. We have a fantastic view. We're looking almost straight down at home plate, and we're not that high. It's probably the closest to home plate we are in any stadium. And you've got the friendly Fenway faithful. So it's just wonderful. It is baseball paradise. And they have Dell's Frozen Lemonade, a treat that helped get me through college.
There you
and
go.
They sell it here at Fenway. I just finished my first cup of it for the weekend, and it will not be the last.
Hey, Eric, I don't know if this is a question that I don't know how much experience you get to have outside of a ballpark, but does Fenway Park have a similar vibe to like what Wrigleyville is in Chicago with the outside, the bars and the restaurant kind of stuff? Is it that kind of thing, or how would you evaluate that?
Yeah, it's very similar. It is surrounded by restaurants and bars, literally bordered by restaurants and bars all the way around. The comp is really good. You know, this ballpark's a little bit older. I think it's been maintained a little bit better than Wrigley.
Mm-hmm.
I personally like it better. I think it has more idiosyncratic tendencies. I like Wrigley too, but, you know, this is a park I've been to far more times. And, when you walk out the door, you don't have to walk very far to find a bunch of baseball fans congregating in a bar.
Do you like when how the out-of-town scoreboard is right out there for you? I found that so cool when I used to go to old Arlington Stadium. I love the out-of-town scoreboard. That was like my favorite thing to watch and see what was going on. And I always tried to guess who the umpires were because they'd have the umpires' numbers, you know, who the home plate umpire was. So I was always into that stuff. So the old scoreboards and stuff I think are so cool.
Yeah, and, you know, there's so many new scoreboards where you can't even find the out-of-town scores. They're not up there all the time.
Right.
And this one, they're staring at you all the while, and you can watch the scores change. You watch the pitchers change. You know, they have the numbers of the pitchers up on the board. It's great. It's the way things were in the old days, and it still really works.
Any threat of rain delay?
Threat of rain or threat of rain delay. You don't need rain to have a rain delay, as we found out yesterday. Earlier in the day, they were actually showing the chance of a shower around 8 o'clock, but they've taken it out of the forecast. So it's hot and it's muggy, but I think we're clear for tonight anyway.
How bizarre was that situation? Was that really, you think, just gamesmanship on the Royals' part just to make sure Waka could get through the game?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd call it gamesmanship. You know, they're protecting their pitcher and their relief pitchers, and I guess I understand it. But, you know, how the forecasters could be so wrong is, is the question. And what they kept telling us was, these pop-up storms can hit at any time. There were so many of them in the area that they just didn't want to take the chance. And it cost us a couple of hours of our life, but it's all right, especially since the Rangers wound up winning the game. Had the Rangers lost, there would have been quite a bit of bitterness, I believe.
Absolutely. Eric Nadel Show here on The Fan. They did win. They won their fourth series in a row. What do you like the most about the way they've been playing for the last couple of weeks?
Well, they're actually starting to score some runs. The pitching's been good all year. Starting pitching has gotten even better. The bullpen has maintained its high level of excellence. But all of a sudden now, you're seeing the Rangers score six runs every now and then. You're seeing them score four runs consistently. Particularly on the road, they're still, needing to get it together offensively at home. But the offense is starting to produce. They finally are averaging over four runs a game. They're starting to climb up in some of those team offensive statistics. And more guys on the team are starting to contribute, and they're getting good contributions from the bench players, from the role players. Obviously Zeke has come off the bench and just been sensational, but yesterday you had Elias Diaz in a heroic role. Nicky Lopez has helped win games, so it's been more of a depth situation that the Rangers have going now than they had earlier in the year.
Eric, is he the best bunting catcher you've ever seen?
I said yesterday when he came up, he's in the National League. He should know how to get a bunt down.
Sure.
And he certainly did. It was a beauty.
How you feeling about Jack Leiter tonight, Eric?
You never know with Jack. I don't know what to expect. Two starts ago, he was brilliant. The last start, he had really bad command problems. We thought early in the game, maybe the game plan was to pitch all the hitters on Cleveland up in the zone. But as it turned out, he could never get the ball down. And as a result, the Rangers lost that game badly. He gave up five earned runs in four and two-thirds. Tonight, to me, is really interesting because it's two very similar pitchers. Jack Leiter, at this stage, at age 26, to me, is very similar to the way Sonny Gray was at age 26. Sonny's now 36. They both came out of Vanderbilt. They are both short major league pitchers. I know Jack is listed at 6'1". That's totally absurd. Sonny Gray is listed at 5'10". I'd like to see them stand next to each other. My guess is they're exactly the same height. But you've got Vanderbilt guys 10 years apart, and I think it's really interesting.
Indeed. Eric Nadel here with you on The Fan.
I can't believe they're listing Jack at 6'1". I mean, if you go into the clubhouse, you see him, that dude is, there's no chance.
Yeah, I mean, in elevator shoes, maybe.
I mean, I don't think he'd dare do that on a dating profile, much less a baseball card. Eric, what do you make about the Rangers' struggles in Boston and why they haven't had more success there? Is that just because usually the Red Sox are good? What are your expectations there as far as Boston and Fenway being a bit of a house of horrors for these Rangers?
Yeah, not only are the Red Sox usually good, they're usually very good at home, and they really take advantage of the home field. They have a very good defensive outfield. They all throw well, and they handle their positions well. This is a very tricky outfield. It's not just that they have the monster in left field, and a left fielder needs to be able to deke the runners on balls that are going to go off the wall and that sort of thing. But you've got that triangle out there, 420 feet away in right center field. It's actually the deepest dimension in any major league park right now. And for the center fielder to have to play that, it's difficult. The right fielder has the rounded corner in right by the pesky pole and the short wall out in front of the bullpens. It's a really difficult outfield, and the Red Sox tend to play it really well. They've got three potential gold glovers out there.
Eric, I'm going to take you back, and I hope you were working this night on July 16th of 2010, and it was at Fenway Park, Benji Molina's cycle. Were you working that night?
Was calling that play.
How crazy was that? That is not on anybody's card. Benji Molina hit for the cycle at Fenway Park?
Absolutely.
What are we doing?
Insane.
Yeah.
And this is probably the only park where he could hit for the cycle because of that 420-foot triangle out there in right center field. And I remember the call. It was just so astounding. Josh Lewin had the call on TV. And we all just looked at each other like, that didn't really happen, did it? And, of course, it did because it's baseball and you don't know what to expect when you come to the ballpark.
Should we expect more Corey Seager days off?
Well, this one is not just a planned day off. Corey apparently woke up today pretty sore. He had a collision at home plate in the first inning yesterday, and although he stayed in the game yesterday, he woke up today with sore ribs, and according to Skip Schumacher, also with a sore jaw. So after a long day yesterday and a flight that got the Rangers into Boston after 1 a.m, they felt that it was best to just give Corey the day off. Hopefully he feels better tomorrow, and maybe this will avoid one of the planned days off actually occurring as a day off. If he's okay tomorrow and ready to go, maybe they can skip the next scheduled day off.
It is a Friday, Eric. We'd love to know what you're drinking and what you're thinking.
Well, again, I just finished my first Dell's lemonade. It is frozen. It is like lemonade slush. They also make it in watermelon flavor, which to me is totally sacrilegious.
Oh.
I'm not in favor of the watermelon Dell's. I want the real lemonade. So that's what I'll be drinking all weekend long. I'm going to get as much sugar in me as I can. And what I've been thinking is that people who aren't aware of a band called the Fruit Bats need to check them out. They put out a new album today. They're one of my all-time favorite bands. They are from Chicago. They're kind of a power pop rock band, and I just love them. The Fruit Bats with a new album today, so check it out.
Love it, Eric. Have a great weekend. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks.
There he goes. Eric Nadel, brought to you by Kubota and brought to you by TXU Energy. Remy loves to get up on the monkey bars on our indoor play set, hang upside down and say, "Dad, I'm a fruit bat." So I love that.
It's a hell of a band.
It's home
bats,
for me.
Bro.
Freaking Fruit Bats. I got to check it out on the way home on music or something.
I wonder if they're better than the Fish Baskets.
Okay, we got to run. We got Soresby and Pickens and Finals and Rangers, and the sports world is just so juicy right now. But the pregame coming up at 5:30. We're back at the Fan.